She had a civic funeral in Lincoln.
Did she really? And she died, so that would make it, she died, how long ago? 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Be 19...
This April.
Yes, yes, 1966.
See, this
one's
down
for you.
Just
ignore it. Well, let's
face it,
I mean, it's better
in a way. Probably
outliving.
If you had living,
it's better. One thing we haven't done is to talk a bit about her parents. You say they were conservatives and active in the Conservative
yes.
Party.
Yes.
Do you know any more about them than that? I mean, do you know what they did? You know?
Well, yes, I do. My grandfather was in trade, and it wasn't totally acceptable in those days. He was a shopkeeper. He was a grocer, shopkeeper.
In Lincoln again?
Yes.
Yes.
And my, you see, my father, of course, was what is known as being in trade.
Mm.
So, in a way, you can see that I and my sister, though it sent my sister the other way, and it made me determined that I would never be involved in politics.
Mm.
My father went to Russia on a trade mission because things were very bad in Lincoln, an engineering city. And when he came back, notes were thrown over the top of the school loos, and it said, "Communists, come out." Well, that was me.
No.
It was bad, really. I was, and I did suffer social ostracism, there's no doubt about it, when I was young. But I almost became immune, and because I was so secure at home.
Yes.
You see, so
your mother was also ostracised, was she?
Yes, she was. Very much so. Except, Lincoln is an unusual city. It really is. Uphill are supposed to live the elite, and to downhill live the working classes. And that was always it. And Minster Yard was full of people attached to the cathedral and that sort of thing. But both my mother and father had friendships up there, which surprised a lot of people. And there was a man who had been at the cathedral that became then a canon, suffragan canon of the cathedral, called Rose, and he came and spoke at my father's funeral and so on.
No, it's very interesting. I mean, did you live halfway down the hill or at the bottom of the hill?
We lived at the bottom of the hill, actually just outside the city.
I see.
Just outside the city.
You ought to, by all accounts, have associated with people at the bottom of the hill.
Yes.
In fact, you had friends at both.
We had friends at both. We did. It was a sort of really, in a way, a rather unusual kind of a setup.
Mm.
You had this ostracism on one hand and this very high regard on the other for both my mother and father together. But if I could say this in all humility, they were both absolutely perfect people, inasmuch as they spent their lives in the service of others. And that's the thing. I've got all sorts of things there that I could show you that would probably be of interest. But I want to tell you the things that you want to know from me.
Yes, you're building up a very nicely rounded picture. What about her mother, actually?
Well, my mother's mother died when she was 11. She had an appendicitis and she died. And I think this again, you see, my mother's life was really very tragic because she was only 45 when my father died. And my grandfather, hard-pressed with two small children, took in a housekeeper whom he married, much to my mother's horror. And I think at 17, she tended to make her life away from the home, and this is how she became.
Yes, I
although
understand.
She was very fond of her father, she didn't much care for this.
What was wrong with the stepmother?
Well, she just wasn't my mother's cup of tea, I think. She was an introvert.
Mm. they, I mean, were they estranged, so to speak, really, for most of your mother's life?
Yes, really. She had no love for her at all.
Yeah.
She really didn't. But my grandfather, he used to come to our house. It was a very keen garden. We had a fairly big garden. And he used to come to our house.
Yeah.
And
so she never ceased to get on with her father. The woman never stood between them.
No. She kept a very close contact with her father until he died and so on. And he did, in fact, have two sons to this other woman.
Her
mother had two half brothers.
Mm. And she also had a sister, did she?
She had a sister who is now 78, I think, something like that. And she lives in Seaton, in Devonshire. Oh. Her husband retired away.
I was making note of this. The sister then wasn't sort of tempted in the same way at all.
She took no part whatsoever at all. Yeah. She just was a devoted housewife.
Mm. And she got married and
dusted every day. You know the sort of thing.
Yes,
that was her life, and this was it. But my mother always said, people are more important things, and if something gets spoiled or broken, don't get upset about it.
Well, you've said just about the same sort of thing to me, actually. tell me about your mother as a mother and as a housewife, so to speak. What was she like? Was she a disciplinarian at all with you?
She was a disciplinarian, but also she was very loving and caring. She used to read to us at night. She watched her as doing our homework. She insisted on this being done, and so she was a great believer, as I said, in education, and felt it was terribly important to be equipped. And she said that that they paid for my sister and myself to go to school because they felt it was better to invest the money in us as people than in goods and chattels.
Yes.
You see, that was the idea. So we never were very well off financially, but we were never hard up.
And you went to the high school in Lincoln?
I went to the high school in Lincoln, yes.
And your sister as well?
And my sister as well, yes. And then, you see, we both went off to Belgium.
Mm. So they really did take trouble with
us. So they took great trouble with us, and we both of us had a private tutor. And in looking for these things for your coming, I found letters that my father had written to me whilst I was in Belgium on the House of Commons notepaper.
Mm-hmm.
And in one he says, I enclose a cheque for £40 for your rail fare home. You'd better stay a night in Brussels and pay your tutor, Monsieur Frockville. Mm-hmm. And so on, and we look forward to your returning home at Christmas. You see, this was the sort of thing.
You always had a backing.
Yes, always we had a backing. And we were always sort of thrust out of the home, but told that was there.
You could always come back then.
That was there, yes. They were very progressive, really, in their thinking, in the way they brought us up, I think. Because although I am now 62, I like to think that I'm...
You move with the times.
Move with the times, yes. Exactly. Mm. I sit on the juvenile court bench, but I have just made up my mind this week that I shall come off at the next thing.
Was your mother good like that, in the sense of knowing when to finish doing things?
Yes, I would say yes, because though to a degree she retired from what she was doing by ill health, it was really because she felt that she had done what she had wanted to do, and it was time that she retired and visited her relations and had some time of her own and so on. She worked hard all her life, really. Shall we go on from the time when my father died and what she did after?
Well, shall we just finish talking about your childhood with her? And you said she was quite strict with you, as
she
most
was.
Parents were.
She was. Yes, she was. But on the other hand, we had an awful lot of leeway.
Hmm.
My father used to take us swimming every Sunday morning to the public baths, because because he felt we must all swim. And we used to go on bicycles to the public baths on Sunday morning. And my mother quite often came with us. She felt that we all ought to regularly have a seaside holiday, and persuaded my father at the end of the 18th War to buy 2 army huts, which he did. And we had them put up in a field at Trustthorpe, which is near to Sutton-on-Sea. It's between Sutton-on-Sea and Maryville on the Lincolnshire coast. One end was living end, the other the sleeping end. And all manner of people came there to have a holiday who would probably never have had a holiday in their life.
I think the working people.
And they came on bicycles because they hadn't the money for the train or the bus fare. And we always spent our whole summer holiday there, and different people came.
So you had a very broad childhood in a way. You
yes.
were strictly brought up, but you were very, you had marvellous educational opportunities and
yes.
wits
yes.
experience.
Yes. yes, yes, we did. And met, I remember at the time when, I don't know if it was the general strike, it was time when there was great trouble in the Welsh mines, and a lot of the Welsh miners were unemployed, and there were about 16 of them that set up a choir and toured the country, and they came to Lincoln, and half of them stayed at our house. Now, it was a great squeeze-up, but camp beds were put up, and so on, and these men stayed a week with us, and I thought they were wonderful. I can remember being very impressed by these miners, who people tended to regard as less than the best. When I was, I forgot how old I was, but probably about 10, I would think, my mother and father felt it was essential that they went down a coal mine to see what the conditions were really like. My mother used to speak of women who were pregnant with straps over them, working underground. You see, she used to speak of this as one of the things that I remembered her talking about, and so on. And so they were going down this coal mine, and I said, I would like to have a remember very well. And I went down this
coal mine.
With both my parents. And I can remember being absolutely horrified at the conditions, and so on. And we went 2 miles underground, and saw the men lying on their backs with just wet trousers on, hacking the coal about 4 yards above. You know, that sort of thing. But truly, me, that was privileged, you see, I felt.
What about appeasement and Hitler and all that? Because we're now getting to the later period. Perhaps we ought to first, what about your careers and so on? Did your mother and father push you at all? Did you ever feel you were pushed?
Pushed in as much as to equip oneself to be of service was of prime importance.
Yes.
And if you didn't have some method by which you could fight, or whichever way you felt was the right way, you had got to be equipped by being educated to be able to do it, because without a certain amount of education, nobody would ever listen to you. And also, your views would not be balanced.
So you weren't pushed from what you wanted to get on so much as pushed because everybody
because
had to be useful.
You had to be useful, and you had to be of service to the community. Both my father and mother sort of instilled it into my sister and I that what we took out we had to put back. As I told you, my sister went to London School of Economics and became a very great socialist, and was in fact asked to stand for Parliament in Lincoln, but she declined because she was married and she didn't have any family, much to her sorrow. But she was doing a lot of other things and she couldn't have done both. So she declined that and did locally.
Was your mother ever asked to stand for Parliament?
I don't know. I don't know whether she was or not. She would have been a first-class woman MP, I'm quite sure of that, because she had a gift of oratory. She could speak without notes. And it flowed. It's extraordinary that both my mother and father were very, very exceptionally good public speakers. My father in particular really was quite outstanding. People have said this, not necessarily people in the socialist movement. I mean, he was accepted. It was a great pity that his career had to come to such sad end, but there you are. He really did wear himself out, actually.
Let's go on to that period, yes, shall we? But, I mean, he died, you say, 1934, that yes, sort of time.
Yes.
What did your mother do then, actually?
Well, we were then living in Sidcup, and she really didn't know what to do. My father hadn't left a great deal of money. Then we were penniless. We had a house, and it was a very nice house. But she had always been interested in Mary MacArthur, and there had been set up a home in Mary MacArthur's memory in Ongar in Essex. And two or three people on the committee were friends of my mother's, and they were looking for a secretary. So my mother went and was the secretary, and she was paid for this, and she did it from home. She did the secretarial work from home. And
in Sidcup?
Yes, in Sidcup, and attended the meetings. And this was what she devoted herself to, this, because she felt it was an exceedingly good and splendid thing. I mean, so it was. Women who had never been able to have a holiday ever from the cares and the toils of back-to-back houses were able to go and live in a little luxury for a fortnight,
yes,
and so on.
Yes.
It was set up originally, I think, perhaps you know better than myself, by the trade unions, but Marks and Spencer's endowed beds, Boots endowed beds for their people, and so on, and the Ongar home became too small. This is during the time that my mother was the paid secretary to this committee, which consisted of a very mixed bag of people. Lady Cynthia Colville, who was lady-in-waiting to old Queen Mary, was on the committee, and Queen Mary became the patroness of the home.
So it was quite a big concern.
It was. Mm. And I went with my mother all over the place looking for another home which would be bigger than the one at Ongar. And eventually we found this place at Stanstead in Essex. It had been the home of the Gilby family,
oh, yes,
the wine people. And they decided, my mother having vetted it first, to save time for more important people, I imagine, they then went to look at it, and it was decided that they would endeavour to buy this home, and they did. And I went with my mother, and we arrived, the two of us, to look at this house through the estate agent. And we were both sort of halted in our tracks when we went in the door, because it was almost like a church inside. It had stone sort of portals, you know, the things one gets in the nave. And down the middle of the whole thing came this winding staircase. And I said to my mother, how lovely it must have been to have lived here and been a bride and married from this house. And I had to come down the staircase, you see, and my mother said, yes, yeah, it's a beautiful house, yes. And we examined everything, the practicalities of it. And my mother said it could be recommended. And it was bought, and it was set up. And then came the war.
Your mother being secretary all this time?
All this time. She did all the spade work.
Mm. And still living in Sidcup?
Still living in Sidcup. Mm. And she did all the spade work. However, then came the 39 war. My father had quite a lot of friends in Germany who committed suicide before, you know, with Hitler and that sort of thing. Another one who came to England and stayed because he didn't come back. Lots of that, I could tell you, but that's...
They were presumably very anti-fascist, were they?
Very, very, very anti-fascist, yes. The
But what about Spain, the Spanish Civil War and so on? Do you remember anything?
I remember rolling bandages for the Spanish Civil War. And a great friend of ours who came from Lincoln, he was a doctor. His parents in Lincoln were regarded more or less as county family. The Wells Coles, and they were regarded, Jervis Wells Coles, they was very much honored and regarded as what I would term gentry. I don't accept that word in a way, but
no,
however, that was it. And this man became a doctor, but his name was Brooke, and they also were a very privileged Lincoln family. But he came under my father's spell as a young man, and he became a diehard socialist against all the traditions and backgrounds of his family. And he moved when the London County Council built, before the war, a huge conurbation of council houses at Mottingham.
Oh, yes, yes.
He had a house built in the middle and became the doctor for the estate and had his practice and his being there. His wife was a socialist too, and she became the only woman governor on Guy's Hospital board. But these were the friends. These were friends, and they lived in Mottingham, and we lived in Sidcup. Mm. So they were our friends. Mm. But they were from the Lincoln background.
Yes, yes.
And so on. But he was my mother's doctor.
Yes, I see. What about Munich? Do you remember the attitude, your mother's attitude to Munich at all?
I remember that they were horrified over the whole business of Hitler and so on. And I can remember that thinking that it was the most terrible tragedy. And so on, and that people I had known had committed suicide, and my father had heard of this, and people who had stayed with us because they were, and not because they were Jews,
but because they were socialists, not
national socialists, but socialists of the
Jews. I understand,
Well, that's very
interesting. What about refugees in general? I mean, does your mother involve herself with refugees? She's probably got enough on her plate.
Well, she didn't in fact involve herself with refugees. I don't remember that we had anybody to stay with us who came as refugees, but naturally she was very sympathetic. Mm. And she was always very conscious of world affairs, very much more so than me. In fact, she used to whip me along, if you know what I mean. And say, have you finished The Guardian today? I don't believe you've opened it. You see, and this sort of thing.
What, even when she was quite
even
old?
When she was the thing found on her deathbed was The Guardian of that day. This is perfectly true. She knew everything that went on.
She always read The Guardian.
Read The Guardian. We had the Manchester Guardian ever I could remember. We also had the Daily Herald when it was the Daily Herald. It's the Sun, of course, now, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. I still have The Guardian because...
That's a loyalty to her.
And I can't find my way about any other paper. Mm. We've tried other papers, but I'm never happy with it. The same way we have The Observer on Sundays.
What happened in the Second War, then? What did
now,
you
then, in the Second War, yes. Well, this was the Mary MacArthur business, you see. So, 1939, she decided... the matron of this new home at Stansted was too elderly and couldn't carry on. So they were there without a matron or anything. So my mother said, well, I won't be the matron, but I will be the hostess. So she then went at the beginning of the war. We let our house furnished. And she went at the beginning of the war to live at this house. And they renamed it Mary MacArthur House. It was called Stansted Hall. Now there is some confusion because there are two Stansteds, STEAD and
stayed there all the Second War.
So she stayed there all the Second War. She was the chief air raid warden for the village. She was the fire officer for the village because she had a telephone by her bedside in this place. She got involved in the village and its affairs as well. And, there was a great astonishment that they had a garden there. Of course, they grew a lot of produce, and my mother was a very keen gardener. And she got him to grow some corn on the cob, you see. And this was never heard of. I can remember that the village people came to see this corn on the cob growing, and she fed it to the human. They never ever had it. And it eked out the things in the war, and it was almost a sort of little thing that happened that people seemed to think was quite remarkable, and golden corn on the cob was good in the gardens and stuff. But that was just the thing.
She was very patriotic, was she, really? Do you know what I mean?
She was patriotic, and she was very much convinced that the monarchy was the right thing. And Queen Mary visited that house. She was its patroness, and she visited it. And she had afternoon tea with my mother, and so on. But this was via Elizabeth Colville.
I see, yes.
You see, this is how this came about.
Well, how about the League of Nations? I mean, was your mother...
Yes, they were both members. Both my mother and my sister were, and myself. And myself. In our other house in Cottingham, we had a big old Victorian house. I carried that on because we had coffee evenings for the League of Nations.
League of Nations Union.
Yes. In my married lifetime, yes. So they were keen on that, but my mother. This was really a full-time thing for her then, but it was still for women, and for working women in particular. And she threw herself wholeheartedly into this. And she ran this home superbly.
Did she really?
Under great difficulties. But there were always flowers, and she was a great homemaker, my mother. And she was very artistic, very good taste, I would say, and that sort of thing.
Would you say she was a motherly figure, really? Is that
yes,
the right way to put it?
Yes, I've got the speech written on the notepaper that one of the staff made, and she'd written this out, and I've got that. She has not only been, you know, our sort of employer, this is one of our employers, she has been a mother to us all. It says this in one of these things. Yes, she was. And people tended to regard her as such and go to her with their problems and so on. She's always had lame ducks. And my husband will tell you that I too have always had lame ducks and still have them.
But did she look a motherly figure? Was she buxom, sort of person, or what?
Not terribly. I've got pictures of her. She was a very pretty woman, in fact.
Think that needlework would really fit, would you, with her interest?
No, but she was.
Go with it.
She was a wonderful needlewoman and ever so artistic. She really was ever so artistic. Would you like a quick drink? Are you? Would you like a quick drink? Would you like to look after this?
Let's go on after the war. I mean, she's managed this hospital as you call the hostess. I mean, she didn't have any.
It was a convalescent home. They didn't have any sick people.
Yeah.
They had women who were war weary and weary of working in armaments factories and that sort of thing.
I see. Yes, it's really doing on a big scale what you had done in the family.
Exactly. It was an extension, really. Yes, it was an extension. She ran that. And then after the war, incidentally, my husband and I were married from and
really?
I was a bride that came down next to
really?
In 1945, yes. And we were married from there. My mother got permission from the Committee of Management. Of course, they said, yes, it is your home, and naturally your daughter has done a lot for the home, which I did. I used to go down on the weekends and help to
she had no medical training, I suppose. So
none whatever. But all these women came exhausted.
Yes.
From the war. Mm. And it was always full, and there was always a waiting list to go there.
She was good at managing staff, was she?
Very good indeed. Very good. And she expected a certain amount of respect, I must say. But so she gave it. Mm. And having given, she got it in return. They were devoted to her. I think all the staff that were there, if my mother had said, go walk in the river, it'll do you good, they would have done it.
Yes.
She went there, in fact, as secretary, and they had in the old home called it a matron, but it was only a really titular thing. And my mother said, I'm not going to be the matron, it's not a hospital, I'll be the hostess and the mum. Mm. And that was it, and that's what she did. And she did that throughout the war, and as I say, she was the sort of chief air raid warden and fire officer to alert when the phone calls came through and so on. She worked very hard, and I used to go down there weekends and so on, because I was by this time. I went. Now, my father had died, and I had come back from a year in... I know you don't hear about it, but it's just an incident. And I felt I ought to be a little more equipped, and there was an offer to do a course through the Ministry of Labour at Liverpool University Social Science Department in Aberfoyle Square. And it was a course on what was in those days called social science, with a special reference to industrial welfare. And it was by selection. You had to do a sort of a thesis and send it in. I did mine on the reorganisation of the health service, which rather amused me. Yes, in a way, but however, that was it. And then I was interviewed, and then they said, all right, well, you've got a place on this thing, and I went. And having finished, you see, the war was underway, and one couldn't do what one wanted to do. And I had to go before this board in London, and they said, you know London? I said, yes. And so they said, well, you'll go to a brewery. And I was horrified, quite honestly. I really was horrified. And I remember the chairman of this board, there was an elderly gentleman, and he sat in the middle, and he banged the table, and all the things jumped up and down. And he said to me that, you will go where you are sent, that's A. And B, they won't fight without beer, they won't fly without beer, and they won't sail without beer, bar Churchill and guns, it is our next commodity, and you will go and help to see it's made. And so I was sent to Truman's Brewery in Brick Lane, and I was the welfare officer and personnel manager. Well, of course, they were mostly women because the men had been called up. Yeah. So I spent the first part of the war in Liverpool and the second part of the war, well, from 1942 and a half, in Brick Lane in Stepney, behind Spitalfields Market at the brewery.
So you didn't really see all that much of your mother at that
time? Except that at that time I went every weekend to Stansted.
I see, yes.
You see,
it was not too difficult from that part.
It was very easy. Yes, very easy. Yes. I used to go from Liverpool Street Station.
Yes,
And it was quite easy. I used to walk through Bob Wreckage and goodness knows what, but one just didn't take account of those things. If you've got to do it, it's extraordinary. In retrospect, one wonders how one ever survived it, but one did. And so I went to what was for me a totally alien thing. And those East End women were tough, and you had to know what you were about to get their support and so on, which you couldn't do your job without it.
Yeah.
But you know, there were a lot of horses in those days in Rose. They all had brewers' drays and so on. And all these horses were cared for by women, because all the men had gone.
So they had to have a woman welfare officer.
So they had to have a woman welfare officer in those circles. So this you either had to go to the services or where. I mean, you were sent by the appointments board, and that's where I was sent.
So did you use that skill afterwards, then, after the war ended in any way?
Well, I didn't in a paid way, because through having been connected with Truman's Brewery, the brewers weren't sent because they had to make the beer, because the troops needed it. Yes, and this, I mean, really, at first I was horrified, but then when I came to see what it meant, I could tell. And you see, half the pubs were dry, but I knew that the troops were getting it. And the airmen were getting it, and so on. And through this I met my husband, who is in fact a technical brewer, but he's production director of whole Northern Breweries.
Did this in any way upset your mother? Was she a tall, teetotal or anything like that?
No, she wasn't. She wasn't. In fact, my mother was devoted to champagne. Whenever there was an excuse, and my husband could tell you the same, and if there wasn't any in the house, she would send one of my children to fetch her a bottle from an off license.
She hadn't got any now.
She didn't smoke. She had an occasional social cigarette, but she wasn't a smoker. But she was very fond of champagne.
Was she good at enjoying herself generally? I mean, did she relax? She could relax, couldn't she?
Utterly. And she was always very well dressed and very smart, and told me I was slovenly and sluttish. She really kept up, and she had no grey hairs. She kept up her appearance to the last.
So she didn't sort of object to makeup or anything like
that?
My
father did. I can remember, you see, I was 20 when my father died. If he saw me with lipstick, he'd say, take that muck off your face. And a speech he made in the House of Commons about domestic service. And he was talking about, it was something to do with women in the house. And I've got the cuttings and things. And he was asked, would the Honourable Member for Lincoln allow his daughters to go into domestic service? And my father replied, what is more noble than helping an overworked mother with her children? And so on. And yes, he would, providing it was the right place. He felt that it was probably a far more useful thing than selling lipstick and high-heeled shoes. Now, that was just what he said in a speech in the House of Parliament. And I said to him, you needn't be saying publicly that I'm going to do domestic work, because I'm not.
But your mother wasn't puritanical, really,
She was very, very broad-minded about everything, and always very open about things, concerned about the approach of what she called, and we could call, you know, permissiveness and so on, concerned about that, and able to talk about. And not many mothers of my mother's generation could do that.
What about birth control, actually, Mrs. Walker? Was she active in that movement? Because quite a lot of feminists were.
I would say, now I have no factual knowledge of this at all, but I know that she moved heaven and earth to get the corporation. She made bullets and my father fired them in that respect. To get a maternity home for him, because she thought it was awful there, being confined in a kitchen and this sort of thing. And yes, she always felt that women had a raw deal and there ought to be ways and means, and it should be government provided whereby their families could be limited and women should be taught about such things. She was very open about that, and said some pretty sort of startling things, which were startling at that time.
You say she was very strongly opposed to the poor law system, the old poor law system as well.
Yes, she was. In fact, she used to go at Christmas and visit the workhouse.
On Christmas Day?
Yes, quite often.
Did she?
Quite often, yes. Now, I say that, but don't let it take too much, because next door to the workhouse in Lincoln, one of my father's brothers, of money, and he had a very beautiful house, and it looked right out over the race course. And it was next door to the wall along the side of his farm, where there were tennis courts and vegetable garden and everything, was the workhouse in Lincoln. And my mother used to go there quite often.
Mm. And it was on the way.
Yes. Yeah, it was on the way. But she used to go, and she, sometimes we went there at Christmas, but my mother would always go there first. Mm. And when I was chairman of the hospital here, when my mother came to live with us, and we used to go on Christmas Day, and I used to take my children because I thought that was important. Mm. My mother would come as well sometimes. She wasn't feeble or senile.
Yeah.
In fact, she was far more on the ball than myself. Far more. And used to tell me what to do.
Well, we've got her as far as 1945 now. And
yes.
She senses malfunction. Where does she go from there?
Well, then, from there, there was complaints from all the various unions and some of the women, and you see the need really came more from the north than the southeast. And there was agitation started about getting a home going in the north. So the person that did this was my mother.
Got it started, you mean?
Yes. She got a deputy to take her place at Stansted. She took time off. By this time, my husband and I were married. We lived a year in Bexley, and then we came to Hull.
And your husband to the Rory?
My husband to the Rory, yes. From which he retires next year.
Mm.
And he is a technical brewer. In fact, you know, it's very specialised in
the fact,
buying the barley and all the rest of it.
So in fact, you and your mother come up north roughly about the same time.
Well, actually, yes, for different reasons, to a degree, yes. There was a period when she did go back to Sidcup to sort things out and this sort of thing, but my sister lost her husband tragically, and my mother thought she ought to give her a home, because my sister had gone to London County Council and done, been in charge of all the welfare work for the blind. That's what she did when she left London School of Economics. That was her job. It was a very large job, but again, it was welfare and the underprivileged and so on. She set up clubs and goodness knows what. And then she combined it with work for the physically, not the mentally, but the physically handicapped. And so on, all under the auspices of the London County Council. So there was a short period when my mother went back to Sidcup. But there was this agitation still going on, and her heart was in the Mary MacArthur home. So we together, she came, and we went to look at a house at Russell, which is near to Whitby. And my husband and I were talking about that this morning. But my mother felt it was unsuitable because it was on a hillside, and she thought if people were coming exhausted, they would not be climbing the hill when they went out and came back again, and so on. So we crossed that off the list, and finally we settled for a house in Poulton, near Blackpool, Poulton Le Fylde. I said, we do choose places with grand names, don't we, Mother? One was Stansted and Fitchett, and the other was Poulton Le Fylde near Blackpool. And my mother set about this, and she did everything without hardly any help at all. I got this house ready and had it open, and it was opened, in fact, by Margaret Bonfield.
When was that?
She was then retired, of course, from public life.
Yes. And this was in the 40s.
She kept up her interest, but this was the Committee of Management, you see. Yes.
So she retired in 1950. It must have been founded, what, sort of 46 or 7, that sort of time?
Yes. I'm just looking. You see, here is, I don't know whether it gives the date on this. It is all right. Dates on things. But
well, people don't think in terms
so
of dates,
busy.
Do they?
All my life I've been busy, as my husband said, busybodying. You see, there's Margaret Bonfield.
Yes.
Bruce Glazier at the opening of the Poulton Home.
Yes.
But my mother did all the spade work for that.
She was a good secretary, was she? I mean, you say she kept a coffee. She was businesslike, was she?
Exceedingly businesslike. She really was. Mm. These are reports, you see.
Yes, I see. study, I'm sure.
But, it's no problem. You may borrow.
Thank you very much.
That will be great.
That will be tremendous help. So anyway, what did she do? We got it to 1950 now.
Yes, it was up to 1950.
She lived at Pelton, did she, while she was
Pelton,
doing all that?
Yes, yeah. And I visited her there quite a number of times. Took my small son. My daughter was born in 1950. So I didn't go to Pelton anymore, and my mother by that time was retiring.
What did she do when she retired then?
Well, then when she retired, my sister had tragically lost her husband and had decided to go back to LCC. So they went back to Sidcup.
I see, yes.
And my mother set up a house again so that my sister would have a home because she couldn't bear to stay at Nottingham. Her husband died behind the newspaper.
It's
a very nice way to go, but not at 40, or 49, I think he was, or something. So she really set up house again, and she said she felt that it was rather a shame for my sister to have to live with her mother at her age, having been a married woman, and so on. So they set about dividing the house into two and having an addition put on. So they built on an extra bathroom and two extra rooms, and there they had their being together but separate. And my mother had her 70th birthday there, and a lot of people, just after they'd got the alterations finished, and they'd really made it very nice. It really was very, very nice. Excuse me, and then they came up to us, and my sister bought a new car while she was here, and they went back in it because she exchanged her old one. She felt it was a better dealing up here than in London or the area around that. And my sister was friendly with cousins of ours who lived at Broadstairs, and they went down there for the weekend. They went to a farm to fetch snakes on the Sunday morning, and my cousin was driving. My mother was in the back. And they don't know quite what happened, but anyway, he had an accident, and then he hit a telegraph pole, and my sister went through the windscreen, and she was killed immediately. My mother in the back was injured and in hospital. And I had to go down, I had to deal with everything, and bring away this new car that was untouched because it was my cousin's car that they were in. And
how did your mother take that?
Oh dear, I think she sort of really did begin to wonder when fate was going to stop hammering blows. But she rose above it in the end. She got injuries, quite horrible injuries. Her legs got wedged up to the front seats because she was sitting in the back, and so on. And we went back to Sidcup eventually when she was fit. I went down, I had to leave my husband, but fortunately I had good help. And when we got back to Sidcup, she said, "It's no good, I cannot live in this house by myself." She had been burgled previously, and that had upset her terribly, and they'd taken a lot of our gardening tools. Well, they'd taken all our gardening tools, and that had made her more mad than some of the other stuff they took. And this doctor I'm talking about, who was very fond of my mother, he writes to me quite regularly. We have a terrific correspondence going on here now, on that Francis Hill's book and all this business. Very intense.
died.
I think my sister was killed in 62.
I see. She was quite a long time in Sidcup then before she came north.
Yes. Really supporting my sister. They were living a separate life. My sister was entertaining her friends.
Did she sort of fit into Sidcup life at all? I mean, did she
But her spare time she spent at the clubs with my sister.
Who
ran these clubs for?
So blind,
for blind and handicapped.
I see.
And it was the first time I had ever seen ambulances that had a platform that worked without a let down.
Yes,
put a wheelchair on it, and then you pushed a button and the thing went up, and it went that person, and you did it.
So she really joined in your sister's life.
And she taught handicrafts for some of these people. She used to make the most marvellous, I know it sounds awfully silly, but imitation flowers, and she could do wonderful things with ribbon. I remember she did lecture times, we were knee deep in rosettes in our class to lecture. And she used to make them about 2 seconds flat. And they were all so beautifully done and so perfect. And she really, it's not she was my mother, but she really was a rather an extraordinary woman. She had her faults, we all have faults, don't we? She really wouldn't let me be fledged in a way, in as much as she always regarded me as a child, you see. And when I became a magistrate, she said, you better get some reading done. And I said, look, I'm not expected to be a solicitor. We have a clerk. I'm not expected to be a solicitor. If you want some background reading, get some. Get yourself to the library. This is the sort of thing. You see, I was married to
She took charge quite easily.
Yes. Mm. And she liked to take charge, really.
Mm. But without being domineering or possible.
I don't think she was really domineering. My husband might say differently, although very happy to offer her a home, and so on, and then they got on together. But my mother's background had been so totally different from my husband, who came from a farming family, and quite a different background completely. My mother, I think, felt that I ought to have married somebody who would have come alongside me, and that's what fortunately my husband hasn't. And I have been able to do it. But if I hadn't had his backing, and he'd been off doing things, I couldn't have done what I have done.
Yes.
And really, I've had a terribly full life. He always said, I don't know why you didn't get a paid job.
What about old age and sort of death and things like that? Did she hate being old?
She never complained about it because she wasn't infirm in any way.
I see.
Her hearing was good, her eyesight was good, her comprehension was good, her interest in current and national affairs and international affairs. And her, some of her comments were so good and so, you could tell she knew what she was talking about.
She was labored to the end of her life, wasn't she?
Yes, she never wavered. I think probably had she lived another decade, she might have begun to think, well, where have we pushed this pendulum? I think she might have begun to think that. Because I sit on the Social Security Appeals Tribunal on the management side, and sometimes I feel very grateful that I haven't been involved politically.
So what did she do in her last 4 years? She had this room. What did she do with herself?
Well, the first thing she did, she joined the National Council of Women. Yes, that was the first thing she did when she came to help. So she was off to their meetings quite regularly. They had a business meeting once in a month, and they had a luncheon meeting once in a month, at which they had a speaker. So she was a member of that within 10 minutes of arriving at our house. She left £25 for the charities fund. At least she didn't leave a will in that, but she had said to me, if anything happens to me, They're always having these piddling coffee mornings to get £5 together. Give them £25 if anything happens to me. You know, just it was just a silly little thing she said. And actually, when she died, had dinner, they thought it was really rather nice. But
she read the papers and kept up to date.
And kept up to date. Yeah. And she had friends of her own age who lived round about. She made friends, and they used to come in and perhaps have a sherry and gossip about things. As a matter of fact, when we left, one of the friends, her daughter is a doctor at this large psychiatric hospital up here, and she said when we were leaving, she said, well, you're going and your mother's dying. She said, I really don't know what I'll do. My life will be a complete void.
So she really did get to know
she
some
got
people.
To know people and got going. And she was a very devoted granny, and my daughter thought there was nobody like my mother. Mm. In fact, my sister's name was Rosalie, but she was called Jane as a nickname. Right, being little, we all have nicknames, I don't know why. And my mother's name was Laura. Well, she just had Laura, nothing else. And my daughter, when she had a baby 2 years ago, and it was a girl, and she said, well, she will be a memorial to Granny and Aunt Jane, and she called her Laura Jane. And she said, Peter will have to accept it whether he likes it or not. And said, but Peter fortunately liked my son-in-law. I'm very fond of my son-in-law. So, my granddaughter is Laura Jane. And Elizabeth says, you know, my daughter says, not for nothing, is she called Laura, by golly. She said she's Laura the second. Yeah. She is.
But did your mother didn't really resent being old then? I mean, she had some sort of philosophy that enabled her to.
No, she didn't have any resentment about being older. Mm. I think she took it in a stride because I think she'd had so many knocks throughout the whole of her life that she felt it was one of the things she'd got to get on with.
But she never, these knocks never made her bitter in any sense. I mean, never sort of twisted
not
her.
Not really. No. Yeah. No. In fact, in some ways, I think it used to goad her on to do things. I would never have been allowed to sit back and do nothing. You know, I wouldn't have been allowed to do that. Mm. Well, I would, I suppose, but I would have been chivvied by my mother.
So she encouraged you to
She was a very great influence on my life, certainly. Mm. And I have done many things since
sort
I've
been
here.
Sort of giving you a feeling of social responsibility and public responsibility.
And my mother said that there are many other channels than political ones. Mm. You don't need to be in a... Because I used to say, Mother, I don't want any part in politics. Mm. I just don't want to be. Mm. And she said there are loads of other ways, you know, that you could get yourself interested and join up and doing things and give service and so on. I myself have done a lot of things.
Was she, would you say, did she like argument or discussion? I mean, was she a great talker or conversationist?
Yes, she loved it. She loved it. As my son said, if I can get a captive audience, God help me, you know.
You mean you've got that problem?
I think so. Mm. I think so, yes. Mm. She did enjoy talking. She enjoyed documentaries on television. Mm. She welcomed television and enjoyed it and thought it was a wonderful invention. Mm. But I think if she saw some of the things that are on now, she would have been quite horrified.
But she's educating herself all through life.
All through, and she didn't stop, and she had the Observer on, so isn't she read it from cover to cover? And if she didn't get the review part finished, it was probably in her room till Friday. She said, don't you take that paper, I haven't finished it. Mm.
Did she ever join or have any sympathy with CND or any of those movements like that?
Not really. I tended to think that CND might be a good thing. I just had a tendency that way. Mm.
She wasn't involved.
But she said she felt it was a dangerous thing. Mm. And she said, you know, it was too lofty without any basis.
Yes, she's a practical woman.
Very,
isn't she, really?
Very. And you see, when I said, well, I thought about it, and I had friends who were Quakers who joined Sydney and went to every Old Master and every Easter for years.
She's a bit starry-eyed.
They were great friends of mine. But my mother said it's built on sand and it has no basis. Therefore, it will not have roots. Therefore, it won't come to anything. And she really was opposed to it because she said that waste of time was wicked. And she thought it was a waste of time.
Yes, that's one thing I wanted to ask you, actually. She was very conscious of time passing, was she? I mean, she economised.
She always seemed to feel that you had to use your time fully and use it well and not waste it. She never sat idle. Sometimes, John, I'd have to put my feet up, but she wouldn't. I used to say, why don't you rest a bit? Or, oh, I want to get through this book. I haven't read this. And get myself in the library. And so on. She was, I would call her restless.
Always on the
go. Always after something and always hoping for better things and so on. Hoping for better things for the world in the end, really. I think she had great faith in Kennedy, probably misplaced now, I don't know, but she cried for the whole day and I said, Mother, don't cry over this, you are silly. She said, oh.
She had a sort of feeling of tragedy, did she, about, she sort of felt sensitive to tragedies, people's.
Yes, I think this is so, because she had had a series of really quite dreadful things right through her life. Her only brother, her own blood brother, of whom she was very fond, lost his leg in a motor car accident, and the fellow who was totally responsible, the police went to see him the next day. Uncle was in hospital, and this man was so upset by the police going to see him and so on. He committed suicide that night, and it was during the time my father was in the house, and because he committed suicide, my uncle could not get one penny insurance or anything else, because there was never a claim made against the suicide's estate. So that was one of the things that my father put right while she was in the house. He got a private member's bill through and had this altered. And that was one of the things that was a memorial, really. And I was reading, I think it was Rhys Davies, a member of Parliament called Rhys Davies.
Yes,
I've got a note there in his handwriting somewhere on the House of Commons paper. And he sent it to my mother. And when the shops bill, he worked very hard for that. You know, they did terribly long. I worked till 10 o'clock at night, shop assistants and so on. And he was one of the prime movers in getting this bill through. And Rhys Davies said in the House that he was sad and sorry that one man alive wasn't alive today, sort of thing, to see this bill going through. And that was Mr. R.A. Taylor, Member of Parliament for Lincoln. He did a lot while he was in Parliament, those short years. But I don't think my father would have been what he was without my mother.
No, she sort of gave him ideas and encouraged
him. Yes, she certainly made bullets and he fired them. He was a man of ideas of his own, no doubt about that.
Yes, well, because he gave her the initial ideas.
Exactly.
Did they read, or did she read your mother a lot?
Yes, they both read it. Both of them. They were both avid readers. And,
what sort of books? I mean, the weekly periodicals and things like that?
The New Statesman. We never had frivolous things in our house to a degree. I used to think it wasn't very fair that other people could have women's journals and things. And we had the New Statesman. But my mother said, you can't buy every newspaper, and you can't read them if you do, so you buy and read the ones that matter, which is what.
So you had lots of books around you as a child, you remember books a lot.
Our house was full of books. We never knew where to put the books, and tell you, loads of books, loads of books. And when we came here, we had to have a sort out. Some I gave to the library, some I gave to friends that I knew would appreciate them, and so on. We have in this attic a lot of books still. But, you know, I really haven't had time, and I've got a lot of things I ought to do. I ought to have been very much more organised for your company.
Oh, goodness, you've got
plenty of time. I've been through old papers and things.
You obviously have. But, so really, this is a very good environment to grow up in, isn't it, with books, where parents encourage you to read and that sort of thing.
Yes, it is. Mm. It is. And, you know, sometimes I kick myself that I didn't take more advantage of it. Mm. And occasionally I didn't want to listen to what my mother had to tell me. Mm. And, you know, since I was in my 50s and then into my 60s, I have felt sorry that I didn't, because I know now I've missed out on a lot of information.
On the other hand, you've got to have your own life.
Well, this is true. This is true. And having married and got children of my own and so on. Mm. Yes, I did. And really, in a way, I don't think, apart from it having been a sort of parochial thing until Humberside came, it's still parochial anyway, I have never done anything of any sort of great merit. But,
well, I mean, you've brought up a family as well as
you make these own things. And we both feel we are very fortunate in our children. Mm. They want to come home, and we're very fortunate in whom they married. And I feel that's a job fairly well done. Especially these days, and they were both subject to pressures, as all kids are these days. My son's 28.
What about health, your mother's health? Did she have ideas about how to keep fit and so on? Did she swim into her old age or anything like that?
No, she had no, what I call eccentric notions about health, except she was a great believer in what she called a good meal. If you went well, a good meal would put things right. No, and she was the least hypochondriac woman I think I have ever known. When I knew at times she was ill, she would never admit to it.
She kept going.
She kept going. She did in the end develop angina. But she said this nuisance thing, you see, she still wanted to go off and walk and do things that she wanted to do. And really she didn't let it stop her, it didn't get in her way. Mm. And she wasn't going to have anything to do with it at all.
So she had a real spirit in her.
Yes. And I went into her room when she died. I went into her room about 7:30, which I did because I knew she would be waiting for a tray of tea. And she was sitting up in bed, and I pulled back the curtain and I said, "Aren't we speaking then this morning?" And I looked at her, and she had died. She had sat up, obviously. The doctor said she would feel uncomfortable in her chest, and she'd sat up, but she was utterly ill. Utterly immaculate. She really was. You know, she was so clean in every possible way. Mm. And she really, I think she died as she would have wanted to, without being any fuss to anybody at all.
She was, I imagine, very independent, especially when she was living.
Yes, in a way, too much so, in a way. She wouldn't accept really help on occasions when I felt she needed to. Have a bit more help, but she wouldn't have any of it. But I feel that I have been privileged to have had the parents I've had. And I feel in a way I ought to have done a great deal more. But I have done as much as I could do. Well, bless you, yes, I'm very kind of you to say so.
Her attitude to your father, I mean, did she pine for him?
Very much. They were very much in love. And as a matter of fact, after my father had died and he'd been dead for some time, probably 5 or 6 years, there was a friend of ours whose wife had died, and he had got away with money. And he used to go to Switzerland a lot, to the Barnard. Three or four times a year, as he loved it so. she wouldn't. And I said, you know, I couldn't bear anybody in Father's place, but it would be nice for you to get to Locarno 4 times a year, wouldn't it? And she said, no, it wouldn't, not with him. She wouldn't have married anybody else, I'm quite sure. Whoever it was could, because she was so faithful to my father's ideals and everything. And when she died, we were asked, I know that my uncle was on the council, but they asked if she could come to Lincoln to be buried. And she was in fact buried, and I wouldn't have thought there would have been room, but she was buried in the grave with my husband, and my father, and my brother.
Yes.
So the three of them are there in a little churchyard which isn't really used now, and it was rather by permission. And myself, being a member of the police authority, it was, when was it? I can't remember when it was. When all police authorities had to have a third magistrate.
Oh, yes.
And they very much objected to it in Hull. I expect they did in a lot of other places as well. And I'm still on the police authority. Now it's Humberside, it was Hull Watch Committee in those days. And Lincoln, of course, had a watch committee. And I remember that at my mother's funeral, the chief constable was at the gate of the churchyard when my mother's coffin came off the thing, and he gave her the salute, and I thought she would have liked that so much, that it was the chief constable of Lincoln. Who gave her the last salute, sort of thing. But I thought it was rather nice that they took that bother, and they had policemen on the route, and so on.
But, one of the things about your mother, she starts off in the women's movement, but she doesn't really stay in it, does she, in the sense that...
In the labour movement.
In the women's movement. I mean, she moves out of the women's movement in a way, doesn't she? She doesn't belong to women's organisations.
She did, no. She joined the WI...
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she joined the WI and was made a life member.
And was she with
for the work that she did for the WI, but that was at Stansted.
I see.
And she was made a life member of the WI. But and she was always rather impressed by the National Council of Women, but she felt they were sort of rather middle-class orientated and didn't have enough account of the poor sections. And the underprivileged, although it's not really it's so, because they are very much concerned with things. But nevertheless, she felt it was a worthwhile organisation to belong to, and that she would hear some interesting speakers, and so on. And so she joined, all the first things she did when she came here, she joined the National Council.
I see.
So not the Labour movement, and she didn't get involved here.
I see.
Yes.
So, in a way, she's not a feminist of a sort of rather militant sort. She's never anti-man or anything like that.
No.
She always works with men in whatever causes works for.
Yes. Mm. No. I think her horizons were pretty broad, really, in all contexts. She wasn't deeply religious. On the other hand, we kept up an association with the man who was my father's chaplain when he was mayor, and who was a canon, and who died at 98 only last year, and who wrote to me twice a year, and he went to live in our home at Hindhead for a retired clergyman. It was only last year he stopped writing for him as he died. And he kept up an association with my mother. And yet, when my father went to Russia, you see, this is one of the extraordinary things. He came to see my mother and he said, I hope the children won't stop coming to Sunday school.
Because the idea would be...
My mother absolutely took him to pieces, you see. And she said, my husband has gone seeking bread for the mouths of the unemployed wives, you know, and children, you see. He hasn't gone on a political mission. He's gone to get orders for Clayton. They won the Rustons and all the lot. Oh, dear.
She was against that sort of narrow type of religion.
Very, very much so. Very opposed to it.
Yes.
And she thought anybody who was prejudiced against somebody for their beliefs were really hardly worth their
liberal in a way as well as Labour, and she has liberal aspects.
I would say to a degree, yes. And in some respect, I probably, but if she hadn't become involved with my father, she probably would have stayed a sort of liberal woman. You know,
yes,
I
mean,
have been a liberal.
Yes.
And I don't think, in view of what happened to her after my father died, that she was really destined for political things.
Mm-hmm.
She used my father, and there's no doubt about it. She did. He had his own ideas, and he didn't need ideas from my mother because his life was so full. He killed himself with work, and that really was so.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds silly to say, but it was true. He wore himself out, and he was told if he didn't stop, he would.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when he went off to the West Indies, but he was no sooner off the boat than he was grovelling round the shacks of the...
But when he ceased to be the an MP, he remained in the tailoring firm.
He remained in that, but he went on. I don't know really what he did. He was still interested. He used to work to Transport House quite a lot,
yes.
From Sidcup, but he kept an interest in the business. And it was only closed down because they were demolishing the top part of the High Street of Lincoln for a new Orbital Road. And my uncle by that time anyway was ready for retirement.
Mm. So that ended.
It was Taylor Brothers at Bespoke Tailing it had written. I never understood, and I still don't know to this day. Except I learned very early.
Bespoke means to order, isn't
yes,
it?
And
you
I
ask
think
for a
so,
special thing.
I think
yes.
so. But sartorial elegance was something that I learned at a very early age. And my father was really, he felt that being a tailor, he had to be well-dressed, and he was very keen on his appearance and so on.
It's odd in a way, that going with the
it
Labour.
It is, you're quite right, yes. Yes, it is. Mm. It is. But he said, you see, that the cloth cap image must be dispelled, and how do you dispel it?
Did he really?
Yes,
what did he mean by that?
Well, I can remember him saying that he'd gone somewhere to speak, and somebody had said, "You're wearing a bowler hat," or something of that sort, and he said, "They thought you'd expect a cloth cap." You see, you know, in my generation, not yours, but my generation, the notion of a cloth cap signified a worker. Then my husband goes out in a cloth cap.
He thought the Labour Party ought to be a broader party than just a working class party.
He did, yes he did, and he was very anxious to get it off his knees, as he said, because they were. And people used to be surprised. He went to open a big new building, I think it was somewhere in the South Lincolnshire, anyway, went to open, and he was presented with a very lovely golden key, and it had an embossed enamel thing on the other side, and the inscription on one side, embossed enamel picture of this house on the other. It was a Labour Party headquarters of some sort, and they bought an old mansion, and it was very lovely. And he went to open this, and again it was remarked on his dress. But he wore velvet collars on his coat and was always very carefully dressed and so on. It's a very
odd
mixture.
He doesn't go along with that Ramsay MacDonald in 31.
He parted ways by conscience.
Mm.
And everybody said, "You'll lose a seat." He said, "I shall have to lose it." And they said, "It's a pity for Lincoln."
Because in retrospect, that seems in many ways the right thing to have done, but it couldn't have seemed as easy as that at the time.
No, it was a terribly difficult decision to make.
Mm.
I've got all the papers in the cutting with reference to it.
Mm.
I meant to say to you, and I haven't got a copy, and I'm sorry about it, that I was asked at the general election, the local journalist, which is really what I would like to have done.
To be a journalist?
To be a journalist, yes,
yeah.
I would have liked that, yes.
Mm.
I don't know if I've been any good at it. It was always one of my best subjects at school. But I wasn't very academic, actually.
Mm.
I wasn't she ran up and said, could I come and see you and talk about the general election? I understand your mother was a suffragette. I said, yes, she was. And they came just before the last election. She came. This is only a young reporter girl, about 28 or 30, I think. And asked me questions and things and so on. And I said, well, I've got a whole load of notes on the suffragette movement going right back, which I've done when people have asked me to go and speak. And I said, you can have those notes if you like. And she took those and used them and sent them back and said they were very helpful. But the photographer came to take my picture and I said, not on your Nelly. Not on your Nelly. He said, don't say I've come all this way. I said, yes, you have. And the foolish man, he took a picture of this belt. Yes, and blew it up. And this picture, that, went with the article.
Yes, but one last thing I wanted to ask you. You answered everything that I wanted to ask you. The only thing I wanted to ask you, and this is ever such a vague question, but about class, really. I mean, did your mother was not a working woman in any sense, was she? She was a middle class woman, really, wasn't she? I suppose. Did she see herself like that?
I don't know. I don't think she really did, quite honestly. She liked to feel that everybody, really given the chance, was the same. She didn't like to go to line in the middle class. I am not, she said, we work for our living, all of us.
She disliked that division, really, between working class and middle class.
She did, very much. She was very opposed to it.
As your father was in there.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. She really wouldn't have anything to do with that at all. She thought it. But, you see, though my grandfather didn't have a lot of money, so I was harping onto the old Thatcher lark. He was a grocer, really.
Yes.
Let's face it.
But your mother could get on with people of any class.
She could, and you see, her writing was good. Her phraseology, her diction, and her putting together of sentences and everything was good. She wasn't what I call an uneducated working class woman made good.
No.
And yet she would not have this middle class background image. She was.
She wanted to be against middle classness.
Yes,
really.
Yes, she did.
Yes.
And I don't think she would. I think she would be bawling at me if she'd what I ever said. Yes, she was a middle class woman.
She didn't like to think of herself.
No. But she had a great liking for nice things.
Artistic surroundings.
She was artistic, and she.
And yet, you see, she moved from home to home to home, didn't she? Yes, she didn't. She wasn't wedded to one home.
No,
was she?
No, she wasn't. She wasn't.
But that's because she put people first, I suppose.
Yes, and you know, sometimes they both of them did things to a degree, and I knew, although I never said, which impoverished us in some ways. There was always enough for us, and so on. But I used to say, why do I have to have my sister's cast-offs? And so on.
But she was quite thrifty in that way, was she?
Yes. Oh, very. Yes, very. I'm too old to think about stuff. The central heating's come on. Now I've left the fire out. I hope you're warm enough.
Yes, I think.
Do you think your wife will be there?
I'll go and get her if I may, because I'd like to introduce her to you.
Left it on.
We've really done a marvellous job, actually.
Well,